Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, angry puppets, cut your strings and run if you can. Run from the puppet master, I beg you. How are you, people? How are you, Mark Riley?
I'm doing all right. How you doing, Mary?
How am I doing? I'm about to lose my damn mind again. I couldn't sleep. I had work to do. Things were hitting the fan last night at home for one reason or another, but it was rough going for a while. Heavy negotiations on the phone lines and whatnot, but I'm not concerned about me right now. What I want to know is, did you or did you not? Well, you go ahead and tell me what you got your wife for her anniversary, because... because I don't, I don't want to tip the other thing.
Well, no. Actually, I got my wife some really nice jewelry that was made by a friend of ours, actually, which she really liked because it was a friend stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then we also went to a certain car dealership.
Oh, so you did do that?
No, didn't do it.
But you took her to the dealership.
She wouldn't do it.
Oh,
she
really?
She wanted to wait a day.
Really?
So I'm going back.
So, okay.
By myself.
All right.
Take care of the people's business.
So I was halfway right.
See, you were pretty right. I thought about you as I walked in, and I said, you know, I don't know if I really want to make Marin right today.
So that's all right.
I did.
So you gave her the jewelry and said, let's take a ride, and you went and looked at some cars.
No, actually, we did it the other way around, because we went to look at the cars before my daughter got home from school.
Okay.
And we didn't open the presents until my daughter got home from school.
All right, so you didn't tell your daughter about the car thing? You're going to surprise her with that?
Probably not, because
she's up right now. We're getting a new car. Well, I just out of curiosity, because when I move back to L.A., I'm going to have to get a car. What car are you looking at and why?
A GS300.
That's a Lexus?
Lexus, yeah.
Oh, that's a nice car.
It's a nice car, and I'm looking at it because I test drove it. It was just, as the young kids say, butter. It was really great to drive.
Is that a hip car, Riley?
I don't know. I don't know, and I don't care.
Or is that just a smooth, cool old guy's car?
It's probably not a smooth old guy's car, because my wife's cousin, who is a professional ball player, much younger than me, he had one.
Oh, he dug it.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell to get, because I'm a guy that I've never bought a new car in my life, Riley.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what it is about me. I don't know if I'm nervous to spend money or I just like to save money, but I've never bought myself a new car ever. And
you want a recommendation? I'll give you a recommendation.
All right, okay.
The Accord Hybrid.
Yeah, okay, all right. See, I like Hondas, and my wife...
They're great cars. They're road reliable.
Yeah.
They don't break down.
All right.
And the hybrid gets stupid gas mileage.
Right, exactly. My wife's been trying to get me to do the Prius thing, and
okay.
I don't know. I think they look kind of funny, and I like them all right. I like the idea of them. I'd like to get one of those cars that runs on French fry grease.
I'd have to go to one of the colleges and stop one of the kids on campus.
I'd like to get a car that actually does French fries and runs on the grease at the same time. It's like, hey, what's going on, you guys? Hold on, let me fill it up. Anyone need fries? You know, you got the fry or anything going there? Maybe it's just a dream I have.
You know what's funny about the Prius, though? It's larger inside than it looks outside. It looks like a little, small kind of car. But inside, the interior room is actually pretty good.
Yeah, how is it possible that it looks small but it's big inside?
No trunk space.
Oh, is that what it is?
No. Well, if you want to create more interior room, how do you do it logically? You shorten the trunk.
Right. Well, what about that Scion thing? My wife kind of liked those, and I was kind of thinking about getting those. But
those are not bad. Those are made by Toyota too.
They're kind of strange. It doesn't look like it's got much clearance. To me, every time I look at one, it's like something's going to get wedged under there.
It looks like a Flintstone Jetsons car at the same time.
Well, yeah, like it looks like I'm just going to go over a can or a rock in the street and just be stuck on it and like balancing on this rock or can in the street. I don't know. Hey, you know what I did yesterday, though? I went and saw a screening of that new film, Syriana.
Because,
you know, I'm a big Bob Baer fan. He's a guy we have on the show. He's
like
CIA operative. He's a guy that wrote the book that this movie was based on, I think, was See No Evil. The book I'm reading is Sleeping with the Devil. And it's all about...
Wait a minute. Is this the one with Clooney in it?
Yeah. It's
okay.
Clooney plays Bob Baer. Remember the last time we talked to Bob Baer?
Yeah.
He told us that Clooney was playing him. Well, this is the movie. And it was directed and written by the same guy that wrote Traffic, that Steven Soderbergh directed. So it's a long movie. And it's kind of... slow, but it's very complicated in its plots. But, you know, when you start to get into the intrigue of oil, the U.S. government, you know, global politics, terrorism, everything is in this movie. And the deals that are made in Washington between the Justice Department, private law firms to guarantee or else to prosecute big oil companies or other companies, it's all about politics. It's all about everything we talk about here today. And it gets a little confusing, but I'm telling you, it captured something about the moral and the moral and financial corruption of all of these institutions, whether they're business or politics or anything else that leads to the chaos in the world today, that I thought was pretty engaging. You know who was sitting right behind me?
Who?
Mike Nichols and Diane Sawyer, yes.
Oh.
They were sitting right there, and I kept wondering if Mike Nichols was digging it. Throughout the whole movie, I'm sitting there wondering what a film director looks at another film director's work as. You know, because Mike Nichols is a pretty tight director. He's had a couple of great movies. I thought Silkwood was a great movie. Carnal Knowledge was a great movie. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf is a great movie. He's had a lot of great movies. He's only had a couple of duds, actually.
He's been busy.
The Graduate he did, what genius, you know? But he got leaner as he got older, and in terms of how he directed films, I just kept thinking, like, I wonder if Mike Nichols is sitting there going, yeah, that shot is coming in from this angle. Okay, that's how that camera would go on that. I would never have made that decision. So I was sitting there thinking for me and Mike Nichols at the same time, so imagine my enjoyment of the show.
Did you speak to him after?
No, but I looked at his wife right in the eye to see if she would remember that I'd been on her show on Good Morning America. Isn't she Good Morning America? She is, right?
And, yes, she is.
But I had the beard, and I look like a homeless person right now because I don't know. There's something about fall that makes me want to wear several different people's clothing. And she looked at me and she said hi, but I don't know if it was with fear, like what's that guy doing here, or he kind of looks familiar. All right, so let's get into some news here, Riley, while we can. Given that the president is busy trying to resell the war by trying to plant the "we are all given bad intelligence" frame in the minds of the dim and devoted, as opposed to the "we did everything in our power to manipulate the intelligence to fit our agenda" frame, which is the truth. It is exciting, Riley, to see documents surfacing and resurfacing that supports the fact that Saddam Hussein was not an impending threat to this country. Whether or not he was evil is not a question. Whether or not he had evil ideas was not a question. The question was whether or not he had weapons of mass destruction and was an imminent threat to us or the countries around him. The answer is no. And this was revealed in a Raw Story piece that we found yesterday. It's not hard to find. We went to Raw Story and there was. And that is that it is in testimony given by George Tenet, in opinions given by Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Colin Powell, before 9/11, all led to the fact that Iraq was no pending threat. Now, what is interesting to me as we get into this story is, according to Raw Story and some unearthed documents by the bipartisan investigation into pre-war intelligence after 9/11, all reports started to change, you know, right after 9/11. And the bottom line is that while Bush was reading the pet goat, as people were flinging themselves out of the World Trade Center, all the Cheney administration was doing at that moment or a few moments after was figuring out how to make this about invading Iraq to set up a base of operations there. And I bet you those were the thoughts going on in that bunker. Those were the discussions with some of the people that went on to become the White House Iraq group in that bunker. But, Riley, let's parse some of this testimony.
All right. What this testimony clearly shows.
Yeah.
Is that there was a drastic change in the perception, the administration's perception of the kind of threat Iraq posed from February of 01 through till late 01 into early 02.
Right.
Now, these documents, by the way, have been unearthed by none other than our good friend Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, who we've had on several times, who was talking, been one of the primary people who has spoken out and spoken up about the administration's manipulation of intelligence. And what this says is that everybody, from George Tenet to Rumsfeld to Powell, the entire defense intelligence infrastructure of the administration felt that Iraq may be problematic, that Iraq maybe, you know, the world would be a better place if Saddam Hussein wasn't there, but that Iraq played no was no particular threat to the United States, did not have weapons of mass destruction or the ability to deliver them if they did.
Yeah, he just had big ideas.
Ideas.
And it's interesting that George Tenet told Congress in February 2001 that Iraq, quote, probably, unquote, pursuing chemical and biological weapons, but the CIA had no direct evidence that it had actually obtained such weapons. These statements, like probably, might have, may, in statements made by Tenet, were taken out. They were pulled out of intelligence statements that were used to justify the war by this administration. So this is demonic manipulation of intelligence in an attempt to mislead the American people into war, which they did. And what's interesting to me, Riley, is it seems that this bipartisan commission that is investigating the pre-war intelligence, all right, this Senate commission, the Senate committee, is obviously doing something. And this is another great indication that the Republicans are starting to change their tune, that the rudder is gone, that Bush no longer has the momentum that he once had, and these guys might actually start to do the work, you know, of the country on some level, but they're freaking out too. They want to distance themselves, so maybe something will actually come out of this committee.
Well, something may come out of the committee, but Mark, what we are seeing take place before our eyes right now is the administration and the Congress, some members of the Republican Congress have an answer. And that answer is to call for so many investigations that the real investigations get lost in the sauce. They want a leak investigation. They want this investigation. They want that investigation. And in so doing, in calling for those kinds of investigations, you get people to a point where they say, there's too many investigations.
Right, so no one knows what information has come from where. That's that classic sort of dispersal.
Bait and switch.
Right, it's a bait and switch, and it's also like, get as many things going on as possible so no one knows where to turn. Everyone just goes, it's just too much.
It's too much, exactly.
But I am excited this story is coming out, and I am excited that there is a trend or a wave or a little bit of a momentum within the Republican senatorial structure, you know, against Bush policy. Things are starting to turn a little bit, and I think they're freaking out. And I'm always happy to see that. We're going to get into that in a second. We're going to get into torture in a second. But Republicans distancing themselves from Bush is just the beginning of it. We'll get into that in a second. 17 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition. Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it. Eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Twenty-two past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Pulled an old hard drive out of a Mac I had at home, and I got to throw it away, and I'm scared to throw it away. It's like throwing away part of your brain. I had to pull it. I've been sitting on this damn computer for like 10 years. I've had this computer, afraid to throw it away. My wife pulled the hard drive out of it. Now I'm sitting here looking at this chunk of machinery, Riley, thinking like, what's on here? What part of my life is on here? Could someone just get everything from this? Because me and my buddy Louie once found a computer in the garbage and hooked it up and found all this weird stuff out about this guy, and we called him on the phone just to see if we could call him. Oh, and the guy answered, and we were like, is this John? He's like, yeah. I'm like, and we hung up. You know, we didn't know what to say to him, but we knew all this weird stuff. Like,
you're going to hell.
Private diaries and letters. You can just, but it was in the garbage.
Yeah,
you
got
to be careful throwing this stuff away.
You're still going to hell.
Well,
so you know.
Well, we didn't.
Okay.
We just found out a couple of things. He had some sexual identity issues.
Uh-huh.
And we knew that he borrowed money from his parents. While Bush runs around the country, as I said, with all the momentum of a 36-point approval rating brings, he's trying to resell the neocon death cults and never-ending commitment to a war without end to the American people. But meanwhile, back in D.C., friends, Senate Republicans have started to discuss an end to the war in earnest. Today, the Senate will consider a Republican proposal that calls for Iraqi forces to take the lead next year in securing the nation. The proposal was brought to the fore by Bill Frist and John Warner. Now, obviously, Riley, what I don't understand is Russ Feingold and other Democrats, we've been talking to Russ Feingold about this kind of thing for years, the whole plan for a tiered and timed withdrawal. We've been talking to him about that since last year. Now, Harry Reid apparently sees the Republican proposal as a sign that American people are demanding a change. Yeah, when Republicans start to go against the GOP party line, go against what the president is out there trying to push the American people, this is one of those great schisms, man. You got the president out there going, we're going to fight forever for as long as it takes till the end of time to fight terrorism. And I hope you're all behind me on that. Meanwhile, the Senate Republicans are saying, we got to get out of this.
Well, you know, they've been planning this for a while, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate, not just Senate Republicans, Republicans in general, the RNC, Ken Mellman, proprietor,
mm-hmm.
has been trying to frame a troop withdrawal that would be palatable to Republicans and one that they can run on next year. See, that's what they're really, that's their end game here, is to make Republican Senate and congressional candidates totally immune from being, from the brushback that's coming from the continuance of the Iraq war.
Well, don't they, but aren't they sitting on that seat? To me, this is great. This seems like rats scurrying for the top deck to try to get in the water before the ship sinks. Is that what's clear about these Republicans, that they are fundamentally disloyal. They're completely opportunistic. They're willing to go whichever way the wind blows in terms of trying to manifest their own, success in the next election, which I guess isn't unlike any politician. But it just seems to me that, given the record of all these guys, if this is what they're going to run on, like they're all of a sudden the anti-war candidate, or they're the ones that want to, you know, bring the troops home, it would seem that their record of any of them would indicate that that is not really what they're about.
But see, what they're about is putting it in, and it's amazing what they do with language sometimes. I got to say, I disagree with them about what time it is, but they are sometimes brilliant at using language. What they are saying is they're couching this whole notion of Iraq troop withdrawal around the idea that the Iraqis have to take up more of the slack themselves, which is something they know all Americans agree with. It's not that, well, you know, we have to leave because of any particular problems that the insurgency is growing. We need to leave because the Iraqis need to do this work themselves.
Yeah, yeah,
it's perfect for them.
Right, right. And John Warner has the nads to say, quote, "We really mean business, Iraqis. Get on with it," end quote. Like what, yeah. We've been screwing around up to this point? Like the Iraqis? Now, bottom line is, you got regular Iraqis in there that are caught in a tribal mess between, you know, Sunnis and Shias and their own families. You got, you know, they were put in this situation by an American invasion that they certainly didn't ask for and they were given. So the idea that we're just all of a sudden going to say, like, get on with it, you're being irresponsible. I mean, there's clearly problems that are relatively unsurmountable that we can only begin to understand.
Well, see, it's difficult to tell a country of people to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and get on with defending themselves when 30,000 of their people have been killed since the war began, for God's sake. People forget. And that's a conservative estimate at how many Iraqi civilians have been killed.
Well, clearly I want the troops to be brought home. Clearly I want an end to this conflict, but it's a little, you can't just, this idea that you can just, like, all of, like, the Iraqis are being lazy.
Yeah, fix it or we're leaving.
I mean, that seems a little crazy to me. All right, so when we seem to have missed some torture material here. I'd like to get into that. We're going to get into bird flu. We're going to get into a bit about, you know, what you can do. We had a conversation with a guy in Texas he's running for Congress. I mean, the time is now, Democrats, to get involved. I'll play that phone call for you in a minute. 27 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
After what I put myself through yesterday, it's Morning Sedition, if you're wondering. It feels like it's Friday. It's only Tuesday, man. Wow.
Oh, no, it's Tuesday?
Isn't it Tuesday? My God. I feel like I've been through a year in the last 2 days.
Call me Thursday.
All right. Call you Thursday. Hey, this weekend, I, Mark Maron, will be at the Higher Ground Comedy Club in Burlington, Vermont.
Yeah.
Saturday night, two big shows. With the lovely and talented and funny Mishna Wolf opening for me. That's November 19th. It's presented by our affiliate WVAA, 1390 AM up there in Burlington. If all goes well, Riley, I'm going to be joining you from Burlington on Friday.
Yeah.
By satellite.
Satellite?
ISDN line. Isn't that satellite?
It's
That's got to be satellite.
Magic?
It is magic.
Oh, okay.
Hey, you know, a few weeks ago, we were trying to encourage, there was actually talk that Dan Pashman, who used to work at the show, was going to run for office and we were going to follow his campaign. But this was before the powers that be started to bleed our show. So, you know, we no longer longer have Pashman, and we don't have the wherewithal to get a candidate. But I'm telling you, putting the message out there, a couple of people have called to say that they're running, that they're going for it. You remember I said, you know, go to wellstone.org and see how you can do it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that did it. Like, we got two calls. We just got a call yesterday I'd like to share with you people. What I'm saying is that the time is now to get involved. You know, the senatorial elections are coming up, but get into Congress, get into school boards, get into local government, get into whatever. Learn how it works and start to facilitate a little change. Don't wait for them to put together a platform. Put together your own platform. You know what's right. You know what your values are. And try and make it happen, because the time is now. The lies of the Republican administration and all the crap they put this country through, you know, on a legislative level, in terms of the war, in terms of moral issues, shoving their morality down our throat. You know, people are tired of it, because people in America fundamentally, eventually, it takes them a while, start to realize, like, oh my God, I'm being used and I feel like an empty husk. And if I don't do something to change this, all my hope will be gone. So this is the time. And we got this call from a guy in Texas yesterday. It was a heartening call. Let's talk to Mike in Denton, Texas. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. I am absolutely great.
Thanks for calling. What do you got going on down there in Denton, Texas?
Well, this is sort of my first official announcement of an Air America-ite running for Congress.
Oh, great. Uh-oh.
You took
Aaron's
advice, huh?
yeah, actually I did. I heard your broadcast a couple of weeks ago saying basically you couch punditatos, get up and do something about it. And you did it.
Well, congratulations, man. Congratulations, Mike. I remember when I said that at Florent.
First of all, I've got to confess that I'm running as an independent,
okay,
not as a Democrat.
That's okay. What district?
District 26, mm-hmm. North Texas. I've never held political office. I've never run for political office. But
that's two big pluses.
I think that'll help you out because, you know, in Michigan, they just elected an 18-year-old for mayor.
As far as the platform goes, I've got about 15 volunteers so far, mostly friends and family, that kind of thing. But we're just trying to put together some points to basically say, hey, you know, the Republican Party has been in power, you know, both houses of the Congress and the White House for 5 years. These are the things that they had not done. They had not addressed the fact that there are 200,000 homeless veterans in
mm-hmm.
the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have not managed to balance the budget. They mm-hmm. have not actually reduced the deficit or solved the issues.
That's for sure.
Security. They've had the opportunity and squandered it, and it's just time to bring some change about.
Well, Mike, congratulations.
Congratulations.
And I'll tell you something, I'm proud of you, if that means anything, and I'm really excited, and I think you should, check in with us frequently during this process, especially when things get going, to let us know how you're doing.
Consider it done, guys.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling, Mike.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Look at that. Mike is going to do
yeah.
it. He's going to go for it. You know, I am saying, you know what? But I am one of these people that was not as educated as I should have been in civic duty. You know, I think when you went to school, did you take civics?
Of course.
I took American history. I don't remember a civics class, but I'm telling you, working here has opened my mind to this whole other world. And just the possibility that anybody out there, if they put their mind to it, can mobilize themselves, get a few people, get a little dough together, and actually run for office and try to change things on that level is an exciting, great thing.
Congressman Marin?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be amazing? I think. Could I do that?
Of course, you could do that. You'd have to decide where you'd run, whether you'd run from L.A. or you'd run in Astoria, Queens. But yeah.
Oh, wouldn't that be interesting? I'm going to think about that because I'm going to have some time on my hands. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. Here we go. From the Boston Globe, my friends. Tensions stir ahead of Bush's China visit. Translation. 1 billion Chinese bicyclists fear fall-prone Bush.
Oh.
Alright, you know. From the Associated Press. Rice in new push to revive Mideast peace moves. Translation, to save Bush, Condi speeds up timetable on Armageddon. From USA Today, AOL to webcast classic TV shows. AOL to webcast classic TV shows. Translation, Gabe Kaplan goes from small screen to smaller screen. Those are okay today. Not great, but they're okay.
Do you think that maybe Bush is now following Condoleezza's example? You notice he was
what, trying to disappear?
Yeah. I mean, last week he was in South America. Uh-huh. This week he's in Asia.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Condoleezza now is extending her trip to the Middle East. It seems to me that they're trying to stay out of harm's way or something.
Yeah, and where's Cheney? Who the hell knows? Where's Robe? He's hiding.
No. I know where Cheney was yesterday.
What was he
doing? Guess who Dick Cheney met with yesterday? Take a wild guess.
Pat Sajak of the Wheel of Fortune?
Ahmad Chalabi.
Oh, see, isn't that amazing? And you know, and I remember that you said to me, you said, you know, hey, don't make any decisions too quickly because that guy might end up president of Iraq.
That's right.
This is the guy that facilitated the manipulation of all the intelligence coming out of Iraq to justify this war. He was on the Pentagon payroll. He was, you know, and then there was a period there where they went through his stuff and he said he was being victimized by the CIA.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden he's part of the parliament and he's in discussions with Dick Cheney. Now, these guys are shameless. They think we're just stupid. It doesn't matter to them what the American people think at this point in time. It just doesn't matter, especially specifically to the neocon cabal, to the neocon death cult that is occupying the executive branch of government right now. And
how ironic is it that the run up to the war in Iraq, right, something that Chalabi was intimately involved with, is now in front of the Congress. And this guy, who now, by the way, is a deputy prime minister inside the Iraqi government.
It's unbelievable.
He's meeting with Cheney and Rumsfeld.
That is unbelievable to me. Is this their last-ditch effort? They're like, this guy's always, he's always done
he's
it for
always
us before.
Been reliable.
Exactly. We can pull it out.
Old faithful.
So let's go. In light of the debate about whether or not America should torture people abroad, the Senate amendment put together by McCain garnered almost a unanimous support in the Senate, and recently, just now, this is unveiled in hundreds of pages of documents obtained by Time Magazine. It has been revealed that CIA interrogators tried to cover up the torture death of an Iraqi detainee in Abu Ghraib. That the detainee was not supposed to exist at all. He was a ghost detainee. Apparently, Monadeh al-Jamadi's body was put on ice and left to decompose, so it would be difficult to figure out how he died. The Department of Defense autopsy ruled it a homicide by blunt force injuries and suffocation. Now, here's the kicker. The CIA operative who interrogated this guy hasn't been charged, and he's continuing to work. I'm thinking he might be working at one of those secret torture prisons that's been hidden from the Senate and Congress as well. See, what's going on here, Riley, is this stuff is coming to the surface just as these things are being talked about. And it reiterates the fact that America should not be behaving like this.
No, America should not be behaving like this. And the people, and you hear this all the time, well, what do you want them to do? Coddle them? Give them cable TV? That's not the point. The point is you do not torture them because Americans are supposed to be better than torture. Dick Cheney.
Yes, exactly. Not only better than torture, but I'm under the dedicated and true belief that by torturing these guys, if any of them get out or if any of them get word of what is going on, you're creating more terrorists. And now that given that they're already dispatching terrorists out of Iraq, keep that in mind, as most of you know, Iraq and terrorists were not connected before 9/11. Now they are actually training there by using our soldiers as targets, and they are dispatching suicide bombers from Iraq into surrounding countries now that we are there. That is what we have brought to Iraq. Now, in terms of torture, there seems to be some sort of compromise brewing in the Senate. Lindsey Graham, the Republican from South Carolina, who authored the original plan to deny detainees at Gitmo any rights to the court system, is reworking it to allow them some.
Yeah, I know. This is sad.
Yeah.
Because the Supreme Court of the United States gave detainees the right to challenge their incarceration in American courts. What the Senate is now trying to do is circumvent a Supreme Court decision. We ought to start right there. The Supremes gave the detainees that right. Congress is now trying to craft this legislation to limit the right that has already been given. Now, what happened was some Republicans in Congress were a little nervous about Lindsey Graham's original proposal, which was to say they had no right. No right whatsoever to challenge being tried before a military tribunal or being designated an enemy combatant.
Yeah.
What the compromise is now doing is starting to bridge a gap there. Carl Levin, again, the senator from Michigan, is involved in this. And as you pointed out to me earlier, what they've now crafted is sort of a jerry-rigged solution to the problem. They will not be able, they will be able to file habeas corpus petitions, but only in one court, the District of Columbia Court.
Okay.
All right, right? And if they are convicted and sentenced to anything from 10 years to death.
Yeah.
Hear that now, folks. Mm-hmm. 10 years to death, they will be able to automatically appeal to a federal appeals court.
And that's not easy?
Put it this way. It's easier than not having any access to the federal courts whatsoever, which is what Graham originally wanted to do.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, you know, we're going to talk a little later in the show. We're going to talk about Iraq in a different way. We're going to talk about, Riley brought this to me, my attention a week or so ago, the use of incendiary arms in Iraq and this, what is it, white phosphorus?
Willie Pete.
Yeah, which is like the new Agent Orange to some people. And we're going to talk to a guy named Todd Ensign of Citizen Soldier, that's an organization, to talk about some of the people that are now coming from Vietnam to look for justice in how they were, you know, spread with, what do you call it?
Agent Orange.
Or Agent Orange. They were, God, just had a brain skid. This guy, he's three Vietnamese victims of Agent Orange are in the States to demand compensation for injuries inflicted upon them and millions of other Vietnamese by U.S. military's use of the chemical during the Vietnam War. And Todd Ensign is going to talk to us about that in a little while. We have Anthony Bourdain. Does he pronounce it Bourdain or Bourdain? Bourdain, that crazy the chef guy.
The crazy chef guy?
Yeah, the Kitchen Confidential guy. The guy who goes all over the world. He's kind of like the rock and roll chef guy. And you know I like food. So, you know, I'm only around for a little while longer. Let's talk to some foodies. And we're going to talk disease in a minute. So that'll be good. We're going to talk about bird flu and about mutations of bird flu, which means what? If George Bush believes and understands and is willing to tell us that the bird flu is mutating, that means he believes in 46 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is Dar Williams. After a long night of electric guitar solos, pyrotechnics, trashed hotel rooms, and bad eating, I listen to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
One past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Looks like Brian from Everett, Washington is on the phone, and he's promised us a song. So if you're a Brian from Everett fan, hang out. And that means you, Brian, stay on the phone till after the top of the hour, because I don't, yeah, you know, I want to give you the proper time that you need to get your song out.
Yeah.
So let's talk about bird flu, because, you know, Riley, as I say, you know, they've got the vaccine. That means they've got the virus. Which one they release on the country depends on how you behave yourselves. So be afraid, people. Here's why the big fear of bird flu exists, folks. Scientists have found that the reason the bird flu strain has mutated is so it could infect mammals. Key word, mutated. They have found that the bird flu doesn't need the regular flu to jump to humans. It can just mutate, i.e., evolve. The admission of the threat on behalf of the administration is a validation of the power and certainty of evolution, my friends. So for all of you marginal, sort of narrow-minded people that insist that evolution is a theory, well, then I guess you don't need the vaccine or any medicine for any diseases that mutate, infect humans, because they can't be real. It must just be God's wrath, so go ahead and die.
Wait a minute. You mean there's an intelligent design component to this bird?
I'm just saying that what it proves is that if the thing is mutating, it is evolving. So when the president says that it's mutating and it's going to infect humans, he's basically saying that evolution is working its magic.
In other words, God can't help you.
Well, no. In other words, that, you know, think what you want, but evolution is a certainty, a fact. Now, here's a scary thing, because, you know, they have this drug Tamiflu, which, as we know, is licensed by Gilead Sciences, which has investors like Donald Rumsfeld, who was once the CEO of a pharmaceutical company, as was George H.W. Bush, who was the CEO of Lilly. Now, listen to this about Tamiflu. In Tokyo, two teenage boys who took the drug Tamiflu, which is the big pharma hope for the administration to fight the pending pandemic, or at least to, you know, sell enough out of fear of a pandemic that they'll make themselves rich and other people rich. So while on the drug Tamiflu, the bird flu drug, some kid went, a couple of kids went crazy and got killed. One kid jumped in front of an oncoming truck. The other, quote, fell, unquote, off a building. After the first kid snapped and jumped in front of a truck, the drug had a the drug company put a warning label that listed side effects including abnormal behavior and hallucinations.
Not insanity.
Well, no. Well, those two together could equal that, right? If you're going to make a semantic equation of like, insanity equals, you could put abnormal behavior and hallucinations.
Yeah.
But they should probably be more specific with the warning, like, quote, could make you throw yourself in front of a truck or jump off a building. But now look, the guys that make a fortune off our sickness with drugs that are dangerous yet encouraged by an industry that price gouges and kills is almost a criminal reality about this country. And all the major drug companies, and this is sort of a good thing, in the same way that people are waking up to the neocon death cult's lies and disingenuousness and complete evil intent for the world and the country, is that people are waking up to drug companies as well. All the major drug companies are taking a hit, image-wise and in the pocketbook, because of Vioxx and because of problems with antidepressants. People and doctors are starting to wake up to the fact that they might not need certain medicines, and if they don't, they can use older, cheaper versions that are proven effective and safer. The need to grow their market has forced big pharma companies in cahoots with the FDA to release drugs onto the market that aren't properly tested, or they just invent diseases that require treatments that either use old drugs or new drugs that aren't properly tested. They just put a list of side effects on there that either scare people away or make the people think like, well, I'm not going to get that. It's not going to happen to me.
Look, the big pharmaceutical companies have been waiting with salivating lips for the baby boom generation to start getting into retirement age.
Wait, rephrase that. To start dying.
Well, no, to start getting old and getting scared of dying.
Well,
okay?
They're getting sick, you know.
Yeah, and what's happening now, remember, next year, the oldest baby boomer will turn 60. This is what the big pharmaceutical companies have been waiting for a generation. And now suddenly they're confronted with the one thing they never anticipated, and that was skepticism about whether or not the baby boomers actually have to use these drugs. And this is due in part to their constant, mind-numbing, repetitive commercials that they run everywhere in the universe saying that you have to take these things in order to feel normal.
Yeah, well, the antidepressants, certainly, there's questions around that. You know, there's questions around who they're prescribed to. They're prescribing a lot of these to kids now because a lot of adults have had their cycle with antidepressants, gotten what they could out of them.
Had their fill.
Right. But many people are really pathologically in trouble with depression, and they need to be medicated properly. But I think a lot of people I think the same people that were blown away by what happened in the world, in the election and everything else, that got depressed and despairing, who went on antidepressants, probably realized, and I think a lot of people should realize that, you know, they might just be disappointed, disillusioned, despairing, frightened for really good reasons. And I think that people waking up to the abuses of the big pharmaceutical companies and people waking up to the abuses and manipulation of the administration kind of comes around one and the same thing, that there's other ways to deal with this stuff.
Well, yeah, there are other ways to deal with this stuff other than making all of these companies filthy, filthy rich.
My dad says it's adaptogens. That's the big thing. Get your adaptogens, all right, and eat your green food. There are vitamins, can work. Even if they don't really work, they can work if you think they work. You dig what I'm saying? We got Brian from Everett in a minute. What else are we going to do? I'm getting a lot of good information about how to destroy a hard drive. I'll share that with you, too. 57 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Blah, blah, blah.
It's 6 past the hour. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Welcome aboard, angry puppets. Cut your strings and run. Don't let the puppet master catch you. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. It's Tuesday morning. It's a punchy Tuesday morning for some reason. I'm a little punchy. I think Mark's a little punchy.
Where?
Come on. I know you went out on your anniversary last night. You're not fooling anybody.
We went to lunch.
I just thought it was hilarious.
Lunch. It was wonderful.
Oh, good. Where'd you go?
place called the Blue Side Grill.
Oh, that sounds nice. You know, anything with blue and grilling, it's got to be good.
No, a lot of sushi, a lot of really healthy stuff.
Oh, I'm getting sick of fish, dude. I can't even. I am getting sick of fish. Me and my big idea is not to eat meat anymore. Man, you hit the fish wall at some point.
What happened? Somebody had barbecue some ribs or something.
I wanted to go out and just eat a double porterhouse with my wife, just because I've had it with fish. I mean, she's like, you know, you want to get sushi again? I'm tired of sushi. It can't be good. I swear to God, you could probably tell the temperature by the way my face changes color outside. I'm full of mercury, man. Look at me. My head's about to pop off. It's like a mercury disease.
Wait a minute. You saying that Marino and Sons got you sick?
No, I don't know. No, I'm not blaming them. It was my own choice. They got the good fish at the Marino and Sons over there in Astoria, the Queens. Hey, look, what are we going to tell? We got Brian from Everett, you know, on the phone. We were just talking about the pharmaceutical companies. Brian from Everett is a strong supporter out of necessity of the pharmaceutical companies. Hey, Brian, are you there, man? Brian?
Pharmaceutical companies?
Yes.
Well, I got my organ all set up. I'm working on a demo for the Ad Council, you know?
Okay.
And it's about a parent that finds a little, their kid with a little pot, you know?
Yeah.
And he goes, it's just a little pot!
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then the kid freaks out, and they end up actually having to hospitalize the kid and put him on medication.
Will you,
you know?
Will you do that again?
He's just a little boy. and so the tagline is medication,
okay.
The anti-drug.
Medication, the anti-drug. Are we going to play it now?
But the song I wrote it was written with Al Franken in mind, and I believe I've been appointed by a higher authority to preach Jesus to the Jewish comedians. The higher authority, of course, being stuff off the top of my head,
mm-hmm.
which of course is better than pulling it out of your butt.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you want to hear the song?
Yeah.
Okay, and it's pretty controversial. It goes into the New Testament and how it's kind of the anti. It's pretty like if you talk to Bush, he'll talk about Apostle Paul all the time.
Hey, Brian, one more time with the pot thing.
What?
Just do the pot thing one more time. The pot thing.
It's just a little pot. It's just a little pot.
Thank you. Now do the song. Great.
Okay. All right.
Here we go. Oh, I thought he was set up.
I didn't know. Oh, wait, what's going on here? That's the wrong beat. Hang on a second. I have performance anxiety with my organ.
Come on. I knew you're just walking across the room. I thought you were all set up over there.
Come on.
It's the top of the hour. We're trying to hold people here,
you hear
Brian.
That?
Yeah. No, I don't hear anything. Get on with the song. Thank you. Okay.
It's a controversial story how the Savior came from glory and he slipped himself right in that virgin's womb. Was it the normal human groaning or alien hybrid cloning? And did he really walk out from the tomb? But I forgive the Jews for killing Jesus. And if you care to notice, he does too. When it came to his undoing, they didn't know what they was doing. And so I sing this happy gram to you.
Oh, this is beautiful.
Now he made the sick feel better, and he knew the Hebrew letter, but he wouldn't do what the church stuff leaders do. And it's not at you he's snapping, but he don't like Daniel Lappin, and he spoke truth to power just like you. Now Paul, he didn't meet him, but he joined him just to beat him, and he told those folks about his hallucination.
That was a rough rhyme there.
And Paul, he was inverted with the mysteries he flirted, and his errors have screwed up the whole dang nation. Now listen to this, the Yamaha MR Electone MR700.
Yeah.
Yamaha's good, man. Yamaha's love.
Check
this out. Listen to this puppy go. Woo!
All right, Brian.
Okay.
All right.
Last verse.
All right.
Okay.
Solo's over.
Now Jesus was a hero. He made good things out of zero. And it don't don't matter if you even care. But if you see a starving Marvin Hamlish and you give that man a sandwich, then the very same idea will be there.
Oh, boy.
But I forgive the Jews for killing Jesus.
Thank you.
And if you care to notice, he does too.
Yes, he does.
When it came to his undoing, they didn't know what they was doing. And so I sing this happy gram to you. And one day soon I might get me a happy gram too.
All right, Brian.
It's just a pot.
It's just a little pot.
It's a little pot.
I don't want to go to the
What kind of medicine are you on now?
Huh? Green tea. Well, listen.
Okay. I'll see you. Thank you so much,
my
Brian.
My thing, I hate the solution to my problem, which is the beer problem.
Yeah.
I just got to stay away from it. That's all I got
to
do.
Get to a meeting,
I've been off beer for a week, and that's good.
Go to a meeting, then.
Just go. Yes, there's one at 7 in the morning.
Just go.
But they just freak me out. Those people are so...
It's not about the people. Just listen and try and get some help.
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
All right, take it easy.
All right.
Thanks, hey,
Brian.
That was Brian from Everett. Oh, man. So for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Scientists believe the avian flu bug is mutated to the point where it can more effectively breed in animals, although not necessarily in humans. The findings corroborate the belief that the H5 strain would not have to mix with a human flu strain to become more dangerous, but it would have to come in contact with FEMA first. Some of the warning signs of avian flu are swelling in your breasts, thighs, and wings. All right. In fact, the flu is evolving so quickly that some scientists fear it may soon develop opposable thumbs and learn to use simple stone tools.
Oh. Trent liked it.
Yeah, very much. Yeah. At a symposium in New York last week, NBC Universal president Bob Wright said a liberal TV network wouldn't work because liberals don't watch much TV. Wright added, if anyone wants a network nobody watches, they can turn on MSNBC or not. Obviously, the president of NBC hasn't seen what kind of money Air America Radio has been earning. Or no, wait. Obviously, he has. Actor Bruce Willis. Come on, can't we take a joke, us guys? We're okay, right? Actor Bruce Willis has announced he will pay $1 million reward to anyone who turns in the leaders of Al-Qaeda. While he was at it, Willis also offered an additional $2 million for the guy who blew up his career. Willis said the reward offer was for real and not part of a show he was doing with his ex-wife's new husband, Ashton Kutcher, called Punking Pakistan.
Oh, God.
Hey, man. So, my negotiations are pretty much done. There will be an announcement soon about what's going to happen in the future of mornings here at Air America. I can't tip anything, but it will be in the next couple of days. I can assure you that, peoples. When we come back here in just a second, let's take some phone calls. Do you want to talk about the democracy or you want to continue this drug conversation? Because I think that, look, you see what they're doing. We have another article here, folks, about the pharmaceutical company, sort of since a lot of adults are growing disillusioned with dangerous drugs and antidepressants, they're turning to kids, they're making up diseases. I'd like to know what your experiences have been in terms of either being medicated for something you didn't need to be medicated about or overcoming certain obstacles that didn't require antidepressants or waking up to the realities of how big pharmaceutical companies either deceive you and now you see the light, people. Waking up is what I want. You can also call in about what political action you're taking in light of the fact that the Republican machine is crumbling, like our buddy out there in Denton, Texas, Mike, who's running for Congress. What do you got going? 866-303-2270 is our number. We'll be waiting for your calls. It's Morning Sedition here. It's 16 past the hour.
Join the Morning Sedition right now. Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
We'll be right back.
20 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program on a Tuesday. In a few minutes, we're going to have Todd Ensign in here. He's a Vietnam vet. He's part of the Citizen Soldier Group. He's going to join us live in the studio to discuss the Vietnam Agent Orange Relief and Responsibility Justice Tour, which kicks off Wednesday night. Three Vietnamese victims of Agent Orange are in the States that demand compensation for injuries inflicted upon them and millions of others during the Vietnam War. This is in relation to something that's going on in Iraq called white phosphorus that Riley's had some interest in, and where, you know, there seems to be some similarities in what's going on. I solicited calls from you people to talk about your experience of being freed from the bondage of medicine, or else needing medicine, and just general sort of, you know, realizing that big pharmaceutical companies are out to get us, not necessarily to help us. And there's a story I got here. Like, there's something about kids. You know, now that the big pharmaceutical companies are being hit in the pocketbook by adults who don't trust them anymore, it seems like there's more drugs going out to kids. Apparently, if you can't deal with your kid's energy level, you can get them on sleeping pills. This is from Medco, a managed care company, from data that was provided from them. Prescription drug data shows that 3 kids in 1,000 were being prescribed drugs that are classified as hypnotics, sleeping pills. These are kids 10 to 19. Professionals say there is really rarely a reason to give kids sleeping pills. There are ways to modify behavior without drugs. But as there was more investigation into this, it seems that a lot of these prescriptions weren't refilled, which shows that either the drugs were used for travel or periods of stress. And then even further investigation showed that many of the kids that had temporary sleeping problems were also on antidepressants, ADHD, and antipsychotics, which are used to treat autism and bipolar disorder. Antidepressants are used in a wide range of disorders, including anxiety, OCD, autism. The study shows that many of the kids that are getting the drugs are not just insomniacs that have other health issues, but a lot of them may not have those health issues. Sometimes you grow out of stuff. And the problem is it's hard to trust doctors because a lot of them are on the payroll. They're being pimped by the pharmaceutical companies, or they don't want to do the work that therapy entails. A lot of psychiatrists do not want to do therapy anymore. They'll just say, all right, let's try this drug. Let's try that drug. Yeah, that one didn't work. How's he doing with this one? And you get this basket case of a kid who's confused. He's the suicidal. Because he might just need to talk, but that has been, they're working against that now.
Well, yeah, they're working against it. Obviously, there's more money to be made in selling people drugs than there is in talking.
Yeah, selling them drugs.
Yep.
Aaron's got some experiences in Madison. What's up, Aaron?
Hey, Aaron.
Well, you know, I've got a 13-year-old and an 8-year-old, mm-hmm. and I've got a nephew also that, you know, I don't take care of, but the same thing happened with him. You go into school at these conferences, and they say, oh, you know, Johnny's not paying attention, or he's talking to the person next to him, and they want to stick him on Ritalin.
Yeah.
You know,
it's almost like schools are working for the drug company.
Yeah, and I've refused to do it. I don't have problems at home with him paying attention to me.
Right. Yeah, the teacher might just be boring. I didn't pay attention in school at all, and look where I am.
Well, I really think, you know, I know teachers' jobs are difficult and all, but, you know, you should be able to manage these kids, and there may be extreme cases, but you know, between my two and my nephew, that's, you know, my brother and that's all three of our kids. That's 100% they've recommended this to.
And but you have not yet heard anything from a health professional in the same area?
Well, I had my son into a therapist, and he was diagnosed with ADHD, although uh-huh. I don't think it takes a lot to be diagnosed with that.
Exactly. You know, what are the constraints of or the context of that particular diagnosis? Yeah, I don't know, man. I think what you're telling us reveals a lot of problems. It reveals that the teachers are incapable of finding the time to address individual student needs. You're showing me that it's very easy to throw that diagnosis around. You're also showing to me that drug companies have infiltrated the national consciousness so much that teachers are recommending them.
Yeah, the main thing with the therapist is saying, well, you know, we've got a really short attention span. And I'm like, well, he's 8.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Ritalin, because I was around and actually working at a school when Ritalin was first introduced. And it was introduced in kids that were in, quote, the special class.
Right.
And what happened was there were certain kids who could not come to school unless their parents certified that they had been given Ritalin. Do you know what one of the unintended consequences of this was? One of those kids became the biggest drug dealer in the school.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because as far as he, now this is a kid that's like 13 years old,
yeah.
right? As far as he was was concerned, if he had to take drugs to get into school, what was wrong with selling drugs?
Interesting.
They're all drugs.
Yep. Thanks for calling, Aaron.
Thanks,
Aaron. Back then, wasn't Ritalin primarily for hyperactivity?
Yeah, it was. It was. It was a calmative.
Right.
That was, and that's why some kids could not come to class without it.
I'll tell you, one of the other issues is how much caffeinated beverages are kids drinking today? Let me tell you something. When I was in college, man, I see these kids, I see 10, 13-year-olds at Starbucks getting the big old espresso drinks. When I was in college, I could not understand why I was paralyzed with fear and hyperchondria and complete hyperactivity, why I could never go to sleep. It took me hours. And I realized that I would sit at the college cafeteria and drink like 6 or 7 cups of coffee with my friends. And I didn't make the connection for my entire sophomore year. I thought I was dying.
Oh my God. It
was all because of caffeine. People underestimate the power of it. I'll tell you something. During the days, because of this job, I will not drink coffee after 11 in the morning. I won't do it.
They've done studies about caffeine and kids, and what they found is there is direct causation between the kind of hyperactivity that scares everybody, you know, parents and teachers alike, and the caffeine. You remove the caffeine, and in large measure, you remove the hyperactivity.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I don't have time for more calls. We kind of let this get away from us because there is a woman on the phone that wanted to defend the pharmaceutical industry as a teacher. I'm sure there is another side to that, and I'm sure some kids do have problems. I'm sorry I didn't get to your call. We'll do it another day. It's 27 past. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We'll be back with Todd Ensign to talk about the horrors of Agent Orange and perhaps get into a conversation about what is going on in Iraq with white phosphorus. 27 past. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Look, folks, you know, that we were just getting into that conversation about antidepressants and Ritalin and kids, and we got a lot of calls, and I told you to get out of there because we're going to go into a guest segment now, and we are going to do that. But I think we should continue the conversation about medicating children after our guest segment, because we didn't really explore both sides of it, and I'd like to do that because I know people, you know, this drugs have saved people's lives, and I've been accused of mischaracterizing depression and antidepressants. So I will once again say 866-303-2270. If you want to call back or if you want to, you know, get into the conversation about medicating kids, let's talk about that in a minute. But it's going to be in a few minutes. So if you call, hang in there. Our guest, for the first time, Vietnamese victims of Agent Orange are coming to the United States to demand compensation for their injuries. The trip is being sponsored by the Vietnam Agent Orange Relief and Responsibility Campaign, and our next guest is a member of the organization's board. He's also the author of America's Military Today, The Challenge of Militarism. Todd Ensign joins us live in the studio this morning. Good morning, Todd.
Hi, good to be here.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming.
Happy birthday.
Today's your birthday.
Yeah. Well, I won't say what year.
Well, happy birthday. Listeners can meet the delegation of Vietnamese survivors of Agent Orange on Wednesday night. That's November 16th at 6:30 p.m. at the Community Church of New York, 40 East 35th Street between Madison and Park. I just wanted to put that out there and also put your website out there, www.vn-agentorange.org. Now, tell me a little bit about the people that are coming to the United States now.
Well, we have three visitors. One is a fellow who was a soldier in the Vietnam War, was sprayed heavily, and now has, it's interesting, he has two of the conditions which the VA in this country compensates veterans for automatically.
Mm-hmm.
He has prostate cancer, and he has diabetes type 2. The other woman has suffered multiple miscarriages over a long period of time, and also has some other health problems that are arguably related to Agent Orange. The third is a doctor who has been working on this issue in Vietnam, trying to get some research going. That's one of the big problems here. It's kind of a catch-22. The government in this country and the courts have said, well, we can't compensate people because there's no numbers that show that statistically, you know, they are at greater risk. And, of course, that's one of the problems. The government has never organized the research that we need.
Yeah. Todd, how widespread, for our audience that may be post-Vietnam era people, how widespread was the use of Agent Orange during the Vietnam War, and to what extent did the government fess up to its use?
Well, it was very heavily sprayed. Most combat soldiers will remember seeing helicopters or planes coming over at different times. It was sprayed in enormous quantities, something like 20 million gallons were dumped over the southern part of the country. So exposure was pretty great for most people living there.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there many veterans involved in this effort on behalf of representing the victims of Agent Orange?
I would say yes. The attitude has changed in this country. Obviously, the war was a long time ago. I think most veterans, even veterans that might have still think the war was justified, do believe today that we ought to take some responsibility for this enormous toxic waste problem that we have, and it's caused so much suffering and death.
Now, how does this relate to the war in Iraq? Because we've heard reports, there was a documentary out recently about white phosphorus and things that are supposed to be used not against people, but people get infected and get in the way of it. What is there some similarity?
I think so. Probably the most controversial weapon over there is the depleted uranium shells.
Oh, yeah, the shells that release uranium into the air, and it almost like it powders it.
Yeah.
And it's all over the place over there.
Exactly.
And they knew about this. They knew the threat of this.
Well, we used it in the first Gulf War back in 91, and there were soldiers that came home from that war that said they were harmed. Again, it's kind of interesting. It's the same philosophy of our government. Don't study it. Don't look for the causal relationship.
Mm-hmm. How much do you believe the government knew at the time they were spraying the Agent Orange throughout southern Vietnam about the after effects, the long-term effects of this chemical?
Well, I don't know about what they knew of the long-term, but one thing's clear, that Dow Chemical and the other companies got together in March of 65 at their headquarters, and they criticized, this came out in the trial that was conducted of the veterans back in the 80s, and they told the other manufacturers, look, you guys, you're making stuff that's very dirty. You got to clean up your act, or you're going to bring the whole thing down on us. And the other companies never cleaned up their act. So, yeah, at the start of the program, they knew that it had dioxin in it, and the dioxin was at the least a very toxic poison.
It would have people, I guess there must have been or has been over time, a lot of efforts to determine some causation between many of the illnesses and the birth defects and that sort of thing that are being experienced by people in Vietnam and Agent Orange. I mean, at what point is that now?
Well, surprisingly, I would say there's been really very little research done. There was supposed to be a large study begun about 2 years ago by the NAIEHS, which is one of our large environmental agencies. This study was then canceled about the same time that the lawsuit was brought by the Vietnamese against the chemical companies. So is that a conspiracy? I'm not sure. But I know this, that we still haven't gotten behind the need for a long-term, this will be an expensive, comprehensive study.
Mm-hmm. Now, you guys are behind some lawsuits that are going on now. You want to tell us the progress of those and where those are at?
Well,
what they are specifically?
Sure. The original suit was filed by the veterans themselves back at the end of the 1970s, and that was a class action. That was finally settled in 84. That's a long, complicated tale, but basically veterans got very little money for that suit. The Vietnamese then, 2 years ago, filed another suit in similar in theories against the chemical companies. The real problem here is you can't sue the government. The government in this country cannot be held liable for what happens while you're on active duty or the result of military action. So we only have the chemical companies. The judge in this case, Judge Weinstein, was the same judge we had back in the 80s, and he dismissed the case. We've now filed our appeal with the Second Circuit here in New York. We're hopeful that they may say at least give them a chance to prove their case. At least let us get the evidence out there and let a jury decide.
Does their standing as Vietnamese nationals make a difference in terms of their pursuit of this lawsuit in the States?
Well, there are some problems with foreign nationals suing in U.S. courts. That's true. The judge basically said that the reason he's dismissing their suit before trial is because there's no substantive evidence. We don't have the evidence. You haven't alleged anything that I can rely on. Therefore, I'm going to dismiss it. And that's the problem here. We don't have the science, which I believe would show that there are elevated risks with this stuff.
Our guest is Todd Ensign. He's director, citizen soldier, and organizer. He's a Vietnam Agent Orange Relief and Responsibility Campaign. Now, what is your what was your attraction to this? Were you exposed to Agent Orange yourself?
I'm not a veteran. I was, like many of us, I was really deeply affected by the Vietnam War. It sort of cut my political teeth on it. And it's funny, many people now see it as sort of almost a piece of ancient history. But I really think, as I said earlier, that the wars we conduct now in Iraq, for example, really show a lot of the same attitudes, the indifference to these hazards, the willingness to use these illegal weapons. And I think our government has a long way to go to make the kind of change that we need.
And the type of warfare that's being fought over there in Iraq is similar. This is a prolonged guerrilla conflict with seemingly no end.
Very, very true. And I'm really wondering, when will the patience of the American people reach a point where we're going to say, let's get out, as we actually did in Vietnam?
It's starting to happen.
Starting to happen.
Now, as because this the tour that's going on with the Vietnamese victims of Agent Orange are going to hit actually several cities where we have affiliates, Air America. They're going to be in Boston on the 18th. They're going to be in Washington, D.C., obviously. They're going to be in Chicago, Milwaukee, Santa Fe, Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, and the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. How are just plain people who may not have had a great deal of knowledge about this, how are they impacted by actually meeting people who've been the victims of this?
Well, that's a good question. I hope, and we hope, that this exposure to people that are really the living residue of this war will change people. And, of course, we're talking about a whole new generation, as you said, who has very little understanding what went on. And that's a very important part of our campaign, to bring the next generation into this struggle, because it's not just about history. It's about how does our military conduct itself today, and does it follow international legal rules?
Well, there's a big controversy in Washington going on about that as we speak, in terms of treatment of detainees and that sort of thing as well.
Well, look, you're going to be tomorrow night. Todd is going to be over at the Community Church of New York at 6:30 p.m. That's at 40 East 35th Street between Madison and Park. Now, who's going to be with you? You want to tell them again who they can meet and what they can expect to hear if we have people go over there?
Yes, we will have a woman who was, as I said, in Vietnam during the time of the spring, and we also have a soldier who will talk about his experience and his cancers. A third person is a Vietnamese doctor, Dr. Nan, who will talk about the struggles they've had over all these years to try to get some scientific work done in Vietnam.
Okay.
There'll also be Vietnam veterans. And also Gulf War veterans are coming. We have invited some of them to speak and link up their struggles with these struggles.
Well, thanks for fighting the fight. www.vn-agentorange.org is the website for the organization. Todd Ensign, it was great talking to you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot.
Now,
we will get back to this, the discussion that we were having earlier, if we can, because I see Ben from New Jersey's on the phone. He's a teacher, and he's going to talk about kids being prescribed antidepressants or Ritalin or other drugs, because it's very easy to dismiss this stuff. And also, I want other people to share their experience around this. I've been on medication before. Do they need it? Do they not need it? 866-303-2270. We'd like to continue that because we felt like we wanted to represent the other side. So you can go ahead and call back if you'd like. 45 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Jones from Monkey Python, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition. They're not the Messiah, they're very naughty boys on Air America Radio.
Forty-nine past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're about to take some calls here in just a second about the fact that people, grown-ups, are starting to become disillusioned with drug companies who are releasing unsafe drugs onto the market. And on top of that, antidepressants for diseases that they're inventing. And some of that trickle-down from the drug companies is going into kids. Kids are the new market for drug companies, new diseases, new disorders. We just had a call little while ago from someone that said a teacher was recommending drugs. Everyone's recommending drugs. Obviously, they help in some cases. Sometimes they don't. And drugs, in terms of adults as well, are being overly medicated. Is everybody working for the pharmaceutical company? 866-303-2270 is our number. I see some calls on the line. I'm going to get to you in just a second. But right now, the civil unrest that swept through France over the past 2 weeks has now spilled over into Belgium. And now, with more on this story, is Morning Sedition foreign correspondent Angus McFarker reporting from Brussels. Hello, Angus. How are conditions there right now?
Hello, Mark. Well, about 90 vehicles have been burned in Belgium in the past week, but the country's not seen rioting similar to that which hit the poor neighborhoods of French cities, where hundreds of vehicles were torched every night.
How would you describe the extent of the damage, Angus?
Mark, I wish I had a pigeon.
Why is that, Angus?
So it could fart into the microphone. That would be the best description of the damage here. Totally inadequate mayhem, Mark. Totally inadequate. Yeah. Let's face it, my bathroom looks worse than this. I've seen better rioting from nuns hooked up to an IV. Pathetic.
All right, so there isn't the kind of damage in Brussels you saw in Paris, then.
Oh, no comparison at all. The Paris riots, oh, those were the dog's bollocks. Top marks, maximum violence. Something to be proud of. There's still blood in my pee from that one.
Oh, man.
Terrible burning sensation.
Okay.
It's like a fire flowing through my man muscle.
All right.
Absolute
all right,
genius.
All right.
I'm
so,
in agony.
So the Belgians don't seem as desperate as the Parisians. Is that what you're saying?
These wee Belgians aren't fit to wipe the crusty backsides of those Algerian lads down in Paris. Genius. But then sequels are always disappointing, Mark.
What do you mean by that, Angus?
Jaws 2? Crap. Grease 2? Crap! I still know what you did last summer. Crap! The only good sequels are Goldfinger and Thunderball. Sean Connery, you know,
right.
Genius.
Yeah.
Oh, like Roger Moore. Same thing with riots. Sequels are crap.
So the streets are quiet now, then. Is that what you're telling me?
Too damn quiet, if you ask me. Oh, here comes some lads prancing around here, pretending to be Jean-Claude Van Damme or the muscles from Brussels or some crap like that. Oi, wanker! Yeah, I'm talking to you, genius!
Yeah?
Do you not know anything about rioting? Look here, here's a perfectly good Mercedes-Benz 350 SL, just sitting here! It probably belongs to a bloody crowd, eh? Still pissed off about World War II, aren't you?
No.
Jerry rolled right over Belgium and stuck it up your waffles, didn't he? Well, come on! That Nazi wagon's just laughing at you, son! Burn it!
Angus, I don't think you should be encouraging kids to riot. What is going on now?
Hey, you wanted a story? I'm giving you a story. Come on, lads. Here's some gas. Yeah, pour it over that Nazi car. Yeah, that's right.
No, Angus.
Who's got the match? Come on. These things don't burn them.
Oh, no.
Yes!
All right,
yes!
Go! All right.
Oh, Mark, you should see this Nazi car. It's burning like a marshmallow on the end of a stick. Ah, it's fantastic.
Oh, no.
Hitler.
Angus,
go!
God, please, no. Don't burn anything else. Angus, please. Angus.
Oh.
Angus, come on, please. Would you stop burning?
Oh, well done, lad. Now, who wants to kick me in the balls?
All right.
Go!
All right. Okay, Angus has got problems.
Yeah,
I don't know if that foreign correspondent thing is working out. So now getting back into this, the awkward transition, not at all. Comedy, and then we go into drugs. Look, we took a call from a concerned parent. And he was telling us how, two of his kids were recommended by teachers to be on drugs, and now we got a teacher in New Jersey. Ben, give us your insight on this.
Look, I have a couple of comments. The first is, as being a teacher, is that I actually never recommended any parents any drugs for their kids, but I had plenty of times where parents asked me, hey, do you think my kid should get drugs? I find that as a teacher, a lot of it really comes from the parents who just don't want to parent their kid, whether that kid is, 12, 16, 7, or even 4 or 2. And I think that a lot of, with the other parent who called about talking about other teacher influence, I really don't think that teachers are the problem. I really think a lot of the time it's that the teachers or the school system gets pressure from the parents who just don't want to actually parent to their kids. That's one.
Well, I that sounds like that's definitely a reasonable complaint. I understand that. And I think it also, don't you think on some level that some teachers are a little overextended as well?
I don't disagree with that, but I think that as in most cases with most teachers, They really do know how to do their job.
Sure.
And they really do know the difference between a 7-year-old who needs Ritalin versus a 7-year-old who doesn't need Ritalin. Ritalin is a fabulous and fantastic drug when it's prescribed for the correct problem. And the problem is that, you know, teachers who do know the type of kids that need Ritalin, kids who literally have no attention span, they can't even write a letter because they're too busy flittering around, that's the type of kid who needs that drug, and the teachers are really educated and trained to notice those types of things.
Hey, Ben.
A lot of the time, you really don't get that type of cooperation from the parents.
Ben, I think you might need a little Ritalin. You're talking pretty fast, buddy. You're delivering the goods, man. But I think you're right. You know, look, I know that when I went to school, I was completely lacked attention. I could not focus on things, and I think a lot of it was because I wasn't really guided well at home.
And I want to make a second point, actually, about the drug companies. Some of the drug companies are much better than the others. For example, GlaxoSmithKline and Eli Lilly. Eli Lilly is a terribly deceptive company with lots of shady practices. They patent pills just by changing the colors. But there are other companies like Merck, for example. Like in the recent lawsuit, mm-hmm. the guy who sued them had like numerous heart problems before he even started taking Vioxx. Also, Merck actually pulled Vioxx on its own accord after it did additional studies, and Merck was the one who told the FDA to pull the drug, not the other way around. Merck actually was very responsible in that case, and if you read the legal proceedings in the case, you'll see that Merck was actually a pretty good guy.
Yeah, a pretty good guy. It's a corporation. We can't use that kind of language for corporations. I understand what you're saying, but despite the fact that some of these companies may be behaving properly, does not dismiss the fact that they have armies of salespeople that are pimping out medical professionals to sell drugs that might not be necessary. Thanks for your call, Ben. We got a lot of calls on the line here. We got some veterans calling about being, prescribed drugs that they didn't feel they needed, and also about some of the treatment they've been experiencing at the VA hospital, and we've got other calls around this issue. So 866-303-2270 is our number. It's 57 past the hour. We'll be talking to you in a second. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
All right, it's 6 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How are you? We're on the phones right now. We're talking about medication. We're talking about how pharmaceutical companies market medication, how they turn out doctors to pimp for their medication, how they make up diseases in order to sell more medication, and how much of that medicine is sold to kids. And much of that is prescribed without it really being necessary. I want to depict both sides of this. I mean, I myself am in therapy. I've been in therapy for years. I myself have tried medication and have been on it for prolonged periods of time to deal with issues in my life. I do fight my own mental disorder battles. I'm certainly not judging anybody who has mental problems as not needing medication, but I think there are both sides of this, and I think it requires some investigation, some counseling, some therapy, some real advice that should be, it should be advice from several different sources before you start getting involved with this stuff. That's all. We've got a guy on the line in Denver named Joe. How are you, Joe? You're a veteran.
Hey, Joe.
Yes, sir. I'm an Army reservist from Colorado.
Uh-huh. What's your story?
I served in Iraq from April of 2003 to May of 2004.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an engineer. I was one of those guys you hear on the news without armor and all that.
Wow.
I returned to Colorado after 13 months in Iraq, and I was having a real tough time. I was having nightmares. I was suffering from insomnia.
Yeah.
So finally I went to the VA to get some help, and they told me I had PTSD.
Sure.
So I started going to therapy. After one therapy session with the VA, they wanted to prescribe me medication right away.
So you had post-traumatic stress disorder, and you went, how many therapy sessions did you have?
after the first one, they wanted to put me on medication.
Sure. And so did they recommend perhaps a group or more therapy?
They wanted to do more therapy. What ended up happening is I turned down the medication mm-hmm. after the initial session. I ended up going once a week for a few months, and you know, just talking it out really helped. I felt like I was making progress, but at the end of each session, they would suggest medication.
Now, Joe, how did the medication make you feel? Was there anything about it that bothered you?
You didn't take
it. I never took
it. Oh, you never took it. Okay.
No, and I got tired of them offering me medication, and so consequently, I stopped going to therapy with the VA. I kept having these problems, so eventually my friends and my family, they got together, and they're like, look, you have to do something. So they got me in touch with a veterans group.
There you go.
I've been attending a group meeting. And things have been getting a lot better for me. You know, the nightmares have stopped. I'm able to sleep, and I feel like I'm working through this.
That's tremendous.
The thing is that I wanted to do it that way without the medication. I felt that the medication wasn't necessary.
Well, sometimes Joe, you know, your instincts might have been correct. Sometimes we do know ourselves better than they might know us, because we live in our own bodies, and that you mm-hmm. believed that there was a process of grief and pain that had to be worked through with people that understood it, and that there's nothing more valuable than that, you know, that the seeking out the veterans group and being able to be with a bunch of guys that understands exactly where you're at. I mean, I tell you that can cure almost anything.
I agree. I do understand them trying to do the medication, just because they're a health system that's overtaxed. You know, they just completely have such a tremendous workload with not enough resources.
But I think what
I understand the reason why. I didn't want to do it that way.
Well, I think what you learned is a great testament to the human spirit, in the sense that a lot of times when you're on medication, it will just suppress the feelings that you knew you had to reckon with somehow. And by taking that action in meeting with people who understood, and like-minded people and people that were experiencing the same pain, you were able to feel support, and you were able to feel safe in an environment where you could share this pain and this grief and these fears. And I'm glad that's working out for you.
Yes, yes. And, I got to get going, but I just wanted to tell you guys I love the show. I listen to you every morning while I'm at work. And,
oh, thanks, Joe.
Keep up the good work.
Thanks a lot, buddy. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, guys.
So, we've got another call here. How are you? This is Anita in New Jersey. What's on your mind, Anita?
Hi, Anita.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to say I'm 43 years old, mm-hmm. and I'm a very anti-medication person, and I feel that doctors overprescribe a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with attention deficit disorder, and I just started on Ritalin last week.
Oh, wow.
I've been in therapy with a ADD specialist mm-hmm. for 3 years
mm-hmm.
and kept resisting the medication. And finally she said, look, you're not going to get any further unless you start trying it. And it's had a really profound impact.
That quickly, huh?
The first day.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, my God. You know what? I'm starting to realize maybe I should get on medicine.
No, I mean, I was in a near fatal car accident 6 years ago, and they tried to put me on all sorts of medication, and all I took was Advil for the pain because I had such bad side effects for everything else. So I don't take it unless it's sort of the last resort.
Yeah, until you're in so much pain that, you know, and you've alienated people in your life and people are worried about you. I'm the same way. We're stubborn. Who the hell wants to admit you're sick, you know?
Well, the thing about the Ritalin for me, I told my husband, I said, it's like I'm listening to the radio and there's all this static, and then I take the medication and I have clear reception.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's allowed me to be a lot more productive, because I was exhausted all the time from just the static in my brain.
Sure, sure. Well, I'm glad that it's working for you, and I thank you, Anita, for sharing your experience with us.
Thanks.
I also wanted to say I really appreciated what that teacher said, because they weren't diagnosing it when I was in school, and so I went through my whole school career not knowing why I had so much trouble in school, and that he's very aware that there are some children who will benefit and some children who won't. And so I really appreciated what he had to say.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for calling. Well, you know, I mean, I think that's what we're trying to say here is that if there is a thorough investigation as to whether people need medicine, I mean, there obviously medicine is very helpful. You know, I think I'm getting closer to it myself. But, you know, both sides of this argument, there's really no argument. The reality is that the pharmaceutical industry does turn out doctors, does pimp the medical profession into purveying medicines that might not be necessary. And the only way you can figure out whether you need them is if you want to try them, if you're in so much pain or you've gone to several different therapists or psychiatrists that have recommended it. There's always two different ways to go. But obviously, when you're in enough pain, you're going to do whatever's necessary. I found that that Joe in Denver's story, that veteran who was suffering post-traumatic stress, was a great, separate from the pharmaceutical argument, this was something that the VA should be doing. I mean, these veteran groups should be, you know, meeting everywhere. There's nothing more important than sharing your pain with people that have the same pain so you feel the support and the safety of those groups. And also in terms of treating your kids' mental illness, you should assess how you're behaving as parents, whether you're doing them justice as parents, and whether they really have a problem. It requires a certain amount of honesty on behalf of a parent to really ask themselves those questions.
It does. And you got to also make sure that your child knows the difference between licit and illicit drugs. Because believe me, it's not that great a reach between somebody, you know, going from having to take drugs to get to school to selling drugs to stay in school.
So, all right. So, Riley, you know, it's not always easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time. But when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But right now it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, last week in the hall of the Improv Comedy Club, I got in a political conversation with a young woman who was a Russian immigrant. You know, she told me that America loves Bush and that a 35% approval rating was good for a wartime president. Good. Can you believe that, Riley?
Did you respectfully point out the error in her thinking?
Yeah, sort of. I called her stupid right to her face.
I was afraid of that. There's more, right?
Oh, yeah. Turns out this Russian was a girlfriend of a comedian friend of mine, and later she and my buddy had a giant fight over the conversation I had with her, and then...
Go on.
They broke up, Riley.
They broke up?
Yeah.
So naturally you feel guilty about that.
No, Brother Riley, I feel guilty because I don't feel guilty about any of it. I'm glad I called her stupid. You know why?
No, why?
Because she was stupid. What kind of person thinks 35% approval ratings is good? A stupid person. It's that kind of lame mentality that's bringing this country down, and some Russian immigrant is going to get in my face and tell me that this country supports the president despite all evidence to the contrary. She was delusional, Riley.
Wait a minute, but surely you feel bad about the breakup, no?
No. The way I see it, she was using him. She was trying to infect him with a virulent strain of stupid that was directly connected to her vagina. Do you understand? He couldn't fight both of those on his own, Riley. I felt like Dr. Marin. I diagnosed his disease, then I treated it.
So your outburst saved your buddy from months or even years of a joyless relationship?
Yeah, I did. I saved him, yes.
While there are mitigating circumstances here, here's your penance. I want you to stop provoking people even when you completely disagree with them. People can change their minds, but only if you give them a chance.
All right, that sounds reasonable. But Brother Riley, you got to admit she was stupid, right?
Yes, my son. Dumb as a box of hair.
Well, thank you for that.
Don't mention it. Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Thank you, Brother Riley. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. I'll see you in the booth at 17 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. Call us at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270.
Call me, doggy.
Twenty-two past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Anthony Bourdain. He's joining us live in the studio. You know him from his many shows. He's the kitchen, what is it, Kitchen Confidential. He's like the rock and roll chef kind of. He's like out in the world. I saw him in Russia on his TV show, you know, drinking vodka and jumping into ice pits. We're going to talk to him about international cuisine. But right now we're taking some confessions in our liberal confessional. Let's go with Linda in Maryland. Linda, how have you sinned? What is your sin, Linda?
Hi, Linda.
Hi, nice to talk to you. I bought a Prius a week before Katrina hit.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed the gas prices.
That's
going
good.
Up.
Yeah.
And now that they're going back down, I'm really disappointed.
And you feel bad because you're disappointed that your environmental and financially friendly disposition was really a sham because you're jealous of people that are driving the big cars.
No, I'm not really jealous of them. It's just that it was so nice to be saving so much money.
Right.
And now, you know, the car is not as economically, you know, successful.
So you're not special anymore. Is that it, Linda?
Yeah.
So wait a minute, Linda, you didn't feel better about not polluting as much? It was really just a financial thing for you, huh?
Well, I really like the not polluting, but then when I got the money, too, and all of my friends were so jealous.
Yeah.
You know, and now I don't have that anymore.
Well, what kind of friends are they? These liberal friends?
Some of them.
Well, I think that, you know, it seems to me that, you know, you're in this for selfish reasons. You're in it to impress your friends and now, you know, you realize that your reasons were sort of shallow. And I think that we just have to get you back on track. And the way I usually do that, it's time to open up the Linda carpool. Now, either you've got to pick someone up at a bus stop and help them out, or start driving some friends to work, or offering some driving services, just so you get your heart in the right place, get a little humility around this.
Okay. I can do that.
See, she, now she sounds disappointed
she,
with
she's
the,
wrapping her
with
brain
the
around that one.
Or else, you know what, sell the car, get an SUV, and wait till gas prices go up again, and then, you know, feel guilty about that. All right?
Okay, because, you know, we need, as liberals, to feel guilty all the time anyway, so.
Yeah, you picked a pretty creative one, but I think what you did is illustrate the liberal reality is just how many of us are truly selfish in our liberal ideologies, and the things that we do that we think are for the good are really just for attention. I think we learned a lot here, so go pick someone up at a bus stop, but don't get hurt.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Linda. She ain't doing it.
I can tell you that right now. She's not doing it. But she did reveal something that is profound about a lot of liberal sensibility, a lot of liberal values, is that a lot of them are rooted not in a collective purpose in terms of liberal values, but in terms of, like, look what I did.
That is the collective purpose. Snob appeal.
I'm the best one. I'm the best liberal. I got it. Oh, they got a Prius, too. I have to get a bike or one of those cars that runs on French fries. All right, well, let's do this. Joe in Manhattan, what is your sin?
What's up, Joe?
Oh, well, it's an age-old story, fellas. I was trying to pick up a chick, and I kind of...
A chick, wow.
An extreme. When, you know, I thought she was a fellow traveler, and started going on about Bush, and then I realized that, you know, she was a Republican.
She was a Republican, okay.
And I didn't know what to do. So yeah. She made this argument that Kerry was icky.
Uh-huh.
That's one of the reasons she didn't vote for him. And rather than say, you know, that's all you Republicans are, you're lizard brains, you're worried about things that you shouldn't be worried about. Instead, yeah. I went with my lizard brain and agreed.
So your lizard brain wanted to get some. And
yeah.
And did you get some?
Yeah, I did.
And how was that?
Icky.
You know, it was icky.
Was it a little disappointing? Did you feel like you'd compromise for something that wasn't... well, you know, it's not the issue of the sexes. You went against your values just for sex, which, you know, happens a lot, and we've had this problem before.
Oh, yes. Millions of Americans do it every day.
I think that you have to go to where your like-minded people are, or maybe even go a little further to the margin, perhaps go to a Greenpeace rally or a vegan restaurant, and try to engage with a woman there. And I'll recommend you something, Joe. Try not to use the word chick when you're doing
it. Yeah, hey, you know, you're probably right. Yeah, that's just not going
to
work.
So you call us up and let me know how that goes when you try to seduce a left-minded woman who's maybe even more extremely more left than you.
Yeah.
That's not a horrible penance, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. All right. It could be, but it's not.
All right. Well,
no, I think he should date a woman that thinks John Kerry was some kind of centrist punk.
Well, why don't you go back and have sex with that Republican for the wrong reasons then?
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
As a punishment of some kind.
All right.
27 pass. Thanks, buddy. I hope I helped you. Yeah. Got a little awkward there at the end. We've got Anthony Bourdain is going to be here in a minute to talk about international food in a rebellious sort of way. So it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Before I bring on our guest, Anthony Bourdain, I want to read a paragraph from Kitchen Confidential I thought was funny. Another class, Oriental Cookery, as I believe it was then called, was pretty funny. The instructor, a capable Chinese guy, was responsible for teaching us the fundamentals of both Chinese and Japanese cooking. The Chinese portion of the class was terrific. When it came time to fill us in on the tastes of Japan, however, our teacher was more interested in giving us an extended lecture on the rape of Nanking. His loathing of the Japanese was consuming. In between describing the bayoneting of women, children, and babies in World War II, he pointed a poster of a sushi sashimi presentation on the wall and say, in his broken, heavily accented English, "That a raw fish. You want to eat that? Ha! Japanese." Then he'd go back into his dissertation on forced labor, mass executions, and enslavement, hinting darkly that Japan would pay sooner or later for what it had done to his country. Our guest is the author of the acclaimed autobiography, Kitchen Confidential, which that is from, Adventures in the Culinary Underbelly, and his television series, Anthony Bourdain, No Reservations, is now airing on the Travel Channel. He joins us here in the studio. Good morning, Anthony.
Morning.
That's
morning.
Very funny, man. Oh. And I tell you, I watch your show sometimes. I'm a big, I'm a food addict. I have a secret desire to be a chef, and I'm a compulsive eater. Is that what I need? You're so thin, though. I don't know what it is with you guys. How can you stay so thin and eat so much?
Two packs of cigarettes a day and a stressed out, neurotic, type A personality really helps.
Oh, I had that. I got to get back on the cigarettes. I knew that's why I couldn't eat what I wanted to eat.
Not the answer you wanted to hear, right?
Wow. Yeah, I'm halfway there. I've been smoking these cigars lately, which is bad. So you've been traveling a lot. I saw you jump into a ice hole. Where was that?
That was St. Petersburg a while back. Middle of winter, coldest winter in 100 years in Russia. You know, basically the program is you sit in a banya, steam a sauna.
A good
flogging. Yeah, a lot of vodka.
Vodka shots everywhere. You're in the sauna, he's doing vodka shots.
Good flogging with birch branches. When you get nice and hot and drunk, you run out stark naked onto the ice and dive into, nearly sub-zero water.
The post-plaza plunge, they call it.
The whole new world's in shrinkage, let me tell you.
So what? Now you've been traveling a lot of different places. You go to Vietnam, Iceland, New Jersey. Where have you experienced the most challenging or most exciting food? What have you eaten that is great? Because I want to know so I can go eat it.
Well, mainland China. I just returned from mainland China. It's a wonderland. I could spend the rest of my life eating across that country and still barely scratch the surface. Vietnam, maybe my favorite place to go in general.
Did you go to Beijing?
Beijing and also Sichuan province around Chengdu and up into the mountains.
Because I went to Beijing and I had bad Chinese food in China. But I also had the original Peking duck. Did you go to that place?
Yeah. I went to a place, I forget.
Been around since the 1800s or something?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I had amazing.
Well, they probably treat you better than me. Do you know? They know you're coming.
Well, you know, I don't know that we went to the same place. My program... Generally, when I walk into a place in China or Vietnam, if I see any other Americans there, I'm not eating.
Oh, okay.
So it's a bad sign that you've heard about it.
Right. But isn't some Chinese food, I know, because I've been to some Chinese restaurants, even here in Chinatown, New York, where you walk in and there's like, here's the menu for Americans.
Yeah.
And then there are those specials on the walls that apparently are just too weird for us to eat or they don't want us to eat it. What is with that?
Well, I mean, for very good reason, most of the first waves of Chinese immigrants who open up restaurants found that in order to make money, they had to sort of dumb down their food for American tastes.
Mm-hmm.
For the small and now fortunately, growing number of Chinese customers, they often had an alternate menu.
Okay.
But in their experience, statistically, those few Americans who would insist on the Chinese menu were sometimes not happy with the food. So there was a reluctance for many years to basically give us the good stuff. And I think now that there are enough Chinese in New York, for instance, to support a Chinese restaurant,
hipper Americans who know about the food.
Yeah, you can run out to Queens and eat the real stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you said you went across China. I guess most New Yorkers think there is one kind of Chinese cooking. What did you experience in traveling across the country? There are a lot of different regional cuisines.
Right, there are eight distinct regional cuisines, at least, in mainland China. I only got, nibbled at the surface, Beijing and Sichuan. Let me tell you, the Sichuan hot pot, which is their, they like spicy stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
And Sichuan hot pot is like a big, steaming, boiling wok of palm oil.
Yeah.
Heavily, I mean, just loaded with those dried chiles, Sichuan chiles, as flower peppers, as they're called. So it's like a scorching, numbing thing that I'm told even the locals pay a heavy price for both. I mean, they're mopping sweat while they're eating it and assuring me that they, too, will be pretty much strapping on the seatbelt the next day as well.
Going in and out. I know that
one. But they probably don't get colds very often. I'm sure their nostrils are clear.
Is that true?
What?
Do you think that's true? Are there certain foods that you can eat that will actually make you healthier? I mean, you're a guy who drinks, you smoke. I mean, I've been through that. I used to think that Thai tom yum kung, the soup with the peppers in it, that if I drank all night and done drugs, that if I had a bowl of that, it would magically, take everything out of my body. It's a lie.
I'm sure there's no medical basis for it, but I found that really spicy food in the morning makes you feel better after an evening like that. The traditional cure-all in Peru, for instance, is ceviche, really spicy ceviche.
Spicy raw fish?
The drainage from the ceviche. It's called leche de tigre. You do a couple of shots of like raw fish juice and chiles.
That'll do it.
Sets you right.
What do they got in Russia for that? What did you do in the morning?
More vodka. That's pretty much a constant. And in fact, it's the one country where I consider myself a pretty good drinker, but every little old lady in that country can drink me under the table. I mean, I was just really kind of buckling under the pressure. I mean, you can't drink the water. Nothing arrives on your table.
Everyone's Keith
Breakfast,
Richards.
Lunch, and dinner. And you're under a lot of pressure to drink because there's always, specific toasts.
Yeah.
This is to our countries. This is to our mothers. You know, what are you going to say?
This is the awake toast.
The hell with your mom. I'm
right. So, okay. Now, what about New Jersey? You've done an episode of your show in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Riley's from New Jersey. We've got a lot of listeners in New Jersey.
Right.
Help us out. Where do we go? What's indigenous New Jersey cuisine?
Well, I mean, I grew up there, and it was hardly a wonderland of food when I was coming up.
North or south? North central or south?
I grew up in Bergen County.
Oh, okay.
I spent time down on the shore.
What town?
Leonia, Englewood.
I went to school in Englewood. I'm from Englewood.
Yeah?
Yeah, I live in Englewood.
Went to school in Englewood, grew up in Leonia.
Yeah.
Not great food as I came up, though. There was my beloved Hiram's in
Fort Lee. Yeah. Right there, the hot dogs. The my aunt lived in the Horizon House right there.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. Hiram's is good, yeah.
And a Baumgart's in Englewood.
Baumgart's, yeah. Yeah, great ice cream.
At Jersey Shore, you had your fried fish at Steamers.
Yeah.
Other than that, you were not finding the finest Italian or French food. I think in a lot of ways, New Jersey is a perfect example of the best of America and why things are getting better and better. The more people from someplace else who come to our country and bring their food chain and their traditional foods, the better it is for all of us.
Yeah.
The Portuguese Ironbound in Newark is an older example. But what's really raised all boats is the Asian invasion at Fort Lee and Edgewater. I mean, you can get really great food now. It's just... And anywhere you see sushi and Korean, it raises the bar for the French and Italian restaurants as far as quality of fish and variety of fish.
Really? So how so? A competition thing or just more coming into the neighborhood?
Americans decided that it was okay to eat and desirable to eat sushi.
Yeah.
Getting a good piece of fish, French chefs would have a real hard time serving squid or octopus or mackerel or any of the or tuna. Tuna was cat food before they considered cat food.
Before sushi.
So the quality, the expectations for quality and the variety available to chefs and customers really changes when you introduce Asian seafood.
Okay, well, let's talk about Asian seafood because I've been doing the pescatarian thing. All I eat is fish. I eat a lot of sushi.
Really?
And I eat sushi out west, and I eat sushi here, and I need to know a couple of secrets because, there is some sushi is better than others, and I know a lot of it depends on freshness. But what are they doing to the fish? Anything?
Yeah.
Will you tell me what?
Okay, it's not necessarily freshness that makes sushi. A lot of sushi is really great sushi is often... been flash frozen,
On the boat.
Either on the boat or in on arrival. It's, I wouldn't say aged, but like tuna, for instance.
Yeah.
Needs to kind of relax a little.
It does?
The best sushi is warm, crumbly, expensive, perfect rice. Still warm.
Right.
Still kind of crumbly.
Right.
Fresh wasabi.
Yeah.
Really good fish. And what the sushi chef is doing is kind of cooking that fish with his own body heat. Sushi should not be served screaming cold out of the refrigerator.
Wow.
It should be, if you want a, you know, the ultimate example.
Okay.
I think Masa in the Time Warner Center. I mean, if you're prepared to blow a real lot of money for a once in a lifetime.
What if I go with you?
You will get
you'll
the same.
Still blow.
You'll get the same experience, believe me.
Well, there's a place in L.A. called Nozawa, which is in a strip mall, and this guy's known throughout the region for having the best sushi there, and he does exactly that. It's warm, crumbly sushi rice, and the fish is, for some reason, just amazing, but very simple.
And tips to your listeners, by the way, if you are, you know, if you're leaving rice, like when you put the rice, your sushi, into the little soy dipping sauce, and you're leaving rice floating around in there, or mixing wasabi in with that, you may as well just slap the sushi chef's face. That's how offensive that's considered.
Oh, my God. So that's why the guy looks at me funny all the time.
That might impact on your experience.
Oh, that's why they're
the fact that he hates you.
don't mix wasabi in the soy sauce.
You should dip fish down.
Okay.
A little quick.
Fish down. Well, that's good to know. So before we let you go here, we're talking to Anthony Bourdain. His book is Kitchen Confidential, Adventures in the Culinary Underbelly. But your TV show, Kitchen Confidential, on Fox cannot be seen anymore. Is that true?
I think they're going to limp through the last few episodes in December. And
what the hell happened with that?
I'm not going to whine. You know,
I whine all the time.
I thought they did pretty well with it.
Yeah.
Sorry to see it go. Like
it got good
like
reviews.
The people who,
you know,
but that's seldom insurance against cancellation.
They based it on your book, so they give you a chunk of change for the character in the book, and they're basing a script on you. Did they give you a created by or
There was some consultant money too. You know,
Did you go to consult?
Yeah.
And what does that look like? Did you tell them, did you teach someone how to cook? I mean, what did you have to do?
More just, you know, technical stuff and, you know, talking about, would this happen? You know, here's the script. Would this happen? Is that ludicrous? You know, how can we tweak it? One of the few remaining episodes, I think there's a character based on my assistant and longtime broiler chef, which I'm very happy about. I'm glad people get a chance to see that.
Oh, good. Well, now, your show is now on No Reservations. Is on the Travel Channel on Mondays at 10 p.m. It's a fun show. Where are you going? What do you got planned? Did you already get a bunch in the can? Are you heading out again?
I've got 14 now. The first season was 13, and we're jumping right back on another 13 with yet to be seen, or let's say China, Japan, Peru, we're going to Ethiopia, India, Indonesia. I have a pretty good job. I get to choose where we go.
That's amazing.
That's excellent.
My friend Brendan Peter McDonald just said he spotted you at Gray's Papaya. Do you
one of my favorite. What a temple of gastronomy.
I used to live at Gray's Papaya.
Now, was it the hot dogs that you like?
Oh, excellent. Is there any more perfect beverage
than
in conjunction with a hot dog?
Where does that come from? Do you know what the birth of that was? Because it's not like just fresh juice. It's like the papaya orange Julius equivalent.
I don't care if it's some sort of strange space age polymer. I don't care.
You just love it. And people love that place. Do you ever go to L.A.? Did you ever eat at that hot dog place, Pink's?
Oh yeah, I've been to Pink's. Great hot dogs, but they do take it. I mean there's like a guacamole dog there that I really thought was taking it. I don't think
too far.
I think guacamole and hot dogs should probably never commingle.
There is a line at that place like it's a Stones concert, man.
Good dogs.
Every day there's like hundreds of people standing on the street waiting to go. I had one there and I thought it was okay. Maybe I'm just not a complete hot dog guy. I remember Hiram's when I was a kid, and I do like Gray's Papaya, but Pink's, that didn't kill me.
I don't know. I always liked Nathan's, and there were two places in Bridgeport, Connecticut called Homa's and Conti's that used to do 12-inch dogs, chili dogs, the greatest.
Is there any delis holding their own still in this city?
For me, Barney Greengrass and Sturgeon King is where you go for chopped liver and, you know, for breakfast.
What about me?
Mommy, I like Katz's.
Are you like Katz's?
Katz's or Second Avenue.
Either one, huh?
Really good, yeah.
All right, well, Anthony Bourdain, thank you for being with us. Kitchen Confidential, Adventures in the Culinary Underbelly is the book, and the TV show No Reservations is on the Travel Channel Mondays at 10 p.m. Good talking to you.
Thanks a lot.
All right, it's 48 past the hour. We'll be back with closing statements in just a couple of minutes. Stay with us. It's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
All right, 52 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
It's Morning Sedition. We're going to land it today for a Tuesday. We did all right for a Tuesday. I'll tell you, I got some a lot of mail coming in, but I got some presents. Got some presents in the mail.
Oh, yeah.
Dear Mark, Morning Sedition has been an important staple of my weekdays for over a year. I really appreciate your openness to self-examination, your relationship with Mark Riley and the rest of the crew. You and Mark were unusual in that you never resorted to cheap, racist, or sexual comments.
We didn't?
Has she been listening to Morning Sedition? I'm kidding. This is very nice. And she sent me this beautiful book. It's a bread baking book from Amy's Bread, because she's heard me talk about my desire. Like, I always talk about the bakers who listen to us on the West Coast and how I kind of want to be a baker. So she says, well, I'm going to have time now. Why don't you start that? Well, no, it's very nice. I got a lot of sweet emails. And this one, this is funny. Hello, Mark and Mark. You two make me laugh every morning. I hope this booklet will help clear your mind on the question evolution or intelligent design. Please read. It is very scientific. And she underlines that a couple of times. Sincerely, Jeanette. And this is one of those religious books. Is there a creator who cares about you? Now, I'm assuming, maybe stupidly, that she's sending this with the tongue in cheek, but she could be sending
it to me. Oh, no, she's serious.
I don't know.
Yeah, man.
What can add meaning to your life? How does that start? Have you dreamed of enjoying a better life, whether in your home area or in tropical paradise at one time or another? Most of us have.
Hey, that sounds like a real estate speech.
I know. I'm already in. And then it's got pictures from Gauguin. I wonder what the angle is. I'm going to have to research this.
Carlton Sheets. I will teach you.
I will come back tomorrow. Now, Riley, what do you want to talk about here in this last few minutes? I think maybe we should talk about this. Last week in an annual media symposium at Trinity College, NBC Universal President Bob Wright was asked by the host of the event, Tucker Carlson, quote, why not start a channel that overtly caters to liberals, end quote. Wright said, quote, for some strange, probably genetic reasons, they don't listen to a lot of radio and they don't watch a lot of television, end quote. Maybe they were watching and listening, they just don't know that they're liberals. That's the way I feel about it, Riley, is that, you know, obviously a lot of people listen to us. We've got a lot of support, yeah. A lot of fans, a lot of people love this network, love this show. And a lot of times, I think that sometimes the liberal moniker, the label, liberal or progressive, some people don't know that they feel the same way we do about certain issues. They don't know how they feel about a lot of things until you sort of lock them in and get them engaged.
Well, you're right, but what Wright was saying is sad in that he doesn't understand that, you know, conservative radio and television evolved over a generation.
Sure.
It didn't combust itself into existence overnight someplace.
But he took a shot at them, too. He said that Wright also pointed out that despite the flash and PR of cable news outlets. Now, he's talking about CNN and Fox.
And MSNBC, which I believe he owns.
Absolutely. They are drawing fewer viewers in a night of programming than networks pull with their nightly newscasters. That's an entire night of programming.
So why didn't we shut down MSNBC then?
Yeah, because what the hell? You know, it doesn't cost him as much as the other one, I don't think.
Oh,
and
okay.
He might as well just go with it. Yeah, absolutely.
Does it make money?
Yeah,
I don't think it does. Yeah. I think CNBC may be the only one of those cable channels that makes any dough, and they may not anymore either.
Well, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Scientists believe the avian flu bug is mutated to the point where it can more effectively breed in mammals, although not necessarily in humans. Though there is no evidence that bird flu has passed in large numbers to mammals, Homeland Security is on the alert for anyone who feeds their young with milk secreted from special glands. Bush administration officials say the new findings are scary, but not yet scary enough to lock down this ungrateful nation that's turned against them. At a symposium in New York, we were just talking about this last week, NBC Universal President Bob Wright said a liberal TV network wouldn't work because liberals don't watch TV. Much TV. The upshot of this statement, our network still faces no competition. Perhaps liberals already have their own news source. It's called Reality. Media analysis say that if someone started a liberal news network, it would only be a matter of time before they tried to inject comedy into the programming. And as everyone knows, there's no audience for that kind of thing. All right. Actor Bruce Willis has announced he will pay $1 million reward to anyone who turns in the leaders of Al-Qaeda. Willis has reportedly also offered ex-wife Demi Moore $1 million to sleep with him just one time. But experts say that the plot's entirely different movie. Do I have a phrase of the day? George Senate's testimony proves Bush manipulated intelligence. Wake up, sheeple. Now Bush is trying to manipulate us about manipulating us.
See you tomorrow, Air America Radio.